Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Feature. I'm your host, Tom Majeure. Today, our topic is roads, county roads. We have a county road expert with us. We have the director of the road commission here, responsible for that, Mike Mazzella. Welcome to Strong Tower Radio.
Hey, it's good to be here, Tom. Thanks.
Good to have you back.
Yeah.
If they want to hear the previous interview with you and some of your cohorts, you put together a pretty good gang. You had Wexford County, and we also had from Kent County, which is the second largest city in Michigan and one of the larger counties also. But always something to talk about roads.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's interested in roads.
That's right. Hey, let's have a word of prayer. A great Heavenly Father, just want to thank you for this day. Lord, you care about everything, and you put together governments and leaders, and you like to have things in order and working for your people. And so be with us. Help us to find out, to cure our curiosity, and maybe learn something that will help us be better citizens. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Well, it's all things roads today. And Mike, just some of those big questions is how do you design roads and how do you decide where to put those roads and who does it?
Yeah, that's a big question. How do you design roads? You know, if we're looking at a road, maybe it was a gravel road and we want to pave that road.
Upgrade it
to a nicer road. You know, there's a lot of decisions that go on before that. We have at the Osceola County Road Commission a board of
somebody's got to pay for this, right?
Yep. And we also partner with the local governments, townships, maybe villages, and they will have some say. So if the decision is made, we want to go and upgrade this road, the township's going to have input and money, and the road commission certainly will. Then we'll go and do our research. We'll totally map that road, so we'll do the 3D model. We'll survey it.
It makes a difference to the ditches if it goes uphill, mm-hmm. the grade, downhill grade.
Right.
If there's a little pond at the bottom of the hill.
Yep. And so we'll do soil borings to kind of figure out what's underneath all of those hills and dips. You know, we want to find all the information we can about this.
You like that road to stay around a while.
Yeah. Yeah. The typical gravel road, you know, like you said, may have these hills and curves that, you know, if you're going at higher speeds, it's not safe. So we need to sometimes take those hills down and build up the low spots and then put a good base in. So we're going to put good sand that's drainable. The old adage, as an old engineer told me once, you want your roads up, ditches down.
Okay.
that's just because, you know, the drainage is such a big part of building a good road.
You don't want water going across it seasonally.
Right. And you know, you want to shed all that water off and then put a good base of sand and then gravel and then a good pavement base.
So is drainage important because we have four seasons in Michigan?
Yeah, not only four seasons, but it seems like half our county is swamp. So, you know, that's added some challenges as you're putting those roads. You know, when the roads were laid out, 100 years ago, mainly on township lines. So, you know, every mile.
In other words, not through my territory. You have to go on the edge of the township line and whatever.
Yep. And section lines and, you know, north, south, east, west kind of roads. So didn't really take into account a long time. Here's a swamp here. We got to go through or go around. And
well, the surveyor did it, so you must be able to put it in there, right?
Right. So we have a lot of those roads, a lot of those challenges with, you know, just swamps and trees.
So some of them are 10-year roads and some are 50-year roads.
Right. Yep.
And you're probably fixing a few of those 10-year roads.
Yeah. Yeah. We have roads where we had one a few years ago. It just fell away. It fell in. And, you know, it was just...
So you were
next
saying,
to the swamp.
Thinking about your predecessors and saying, what were they thinking?
right, yeah. Yep.
So it's a lot of fun. But here's a question. Do you spend more times with roads in the summer or the winter?
Actually, we probably spend more times with roads in the summer. Because we're constantly mowing, we're constantly brushing. We have crews that do that all year long. We have crews that are blading the roads all summer. We have construction crews that are...
Are those only for gravel roads, or are those gravel shoulders on paved roads?
Yeah, both. Yeah, okay. We'll do both of those. And, you know, we're doing paving projects, patching. And so we have more people. We hire a lot of seasonal people in the summer. We have more people busier on more roads in the summer than the winter. The winter is really contingent on whether it snows or not. You know, if it's snowing, we're out. If it's not, we're generally doing some brushing projects, you know, doing projects in the shop and that type of thing.
You know, it's interesting. Just noticed the last day I live up there, and we're in Wexford County. Strong Tower Radio is on the same road as I am. And man, I saw the county dump trucks just like doing a relay race or a bucket exchange. They must have been going to the sand pit and getting a lot of sand and doing something along the way there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what about weather? What advice do you have to our drivers and listeners, safety issues that you would like to encourage our listeners to be attentive to? Now you've got those flashing green lights. It took a while for us to get used to them, but mm-hmm. that means it's road or some other than emergency vehicles and police and fire and ambulance. So.
Yeah, anytime you see those lights, whether it's green, red, just be alert. There's something going on. There's some big equipment up here. Be alert. Slow down. There's actually a state law now that says, you know, you have to be back 200 feet before you can safely move your way around there. Especially at intersections, that's where we see a lot of times accidents will happen with our trucks, because our guys will be stopped at that intersection because it's trying to clear it out, and it'll be backing up. And people don't realize that, and they'll come up and there'll be a little fender bender collision just because they didn't realize, you know, how big that truck is, and it was stopped and it was trying to get that intersection clear.
So you're talking about snow and so on and so forth,
right?
Because if anybody's ever driven a snowplow, there's a little finesse to pushing snow back around.
Yeah, there's some finesse. There's a technique that our guys use, and often it involves stopping and going and backing up, and so just when you see those lights, just be on your alert, because that could be a dangerous situation.
What about weather conditions? If people say they put something out there, the National Weather Service, what words of advice to weather advisories?
Yeah, take those seriously. If you do have to get out, use caution, especially in the beginning of the year. Everyone is getting their snow legs back, and that's when we see a lot of the collisions and the people not understanding the condition, not used to those conditions. So if you do have to get out, just go slower, be alert, and just give yourself that extra time to get to where you need to go.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, I know you, and you have a great sense of humor, and I'll have to find this and share it with you on the Prairie Home Companion. That's been a few years back. They had something on New Year's Eve program, and they had an audio drama strip, and the way it opened up was they heard this warning, terrible weather conditions, no one should go out. Of course, they're somewhere in Minnesota, of course, and no person should go out. And all of a sudden, there's this husband and wife, and all of a sudden, you hear the doorknob to the closet open up, and you hear the rattling, and she says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I've heard the call. It's I have to go out," and some of us fall to that lower nature, and we kind of enjoy seeing if we can beat the system in the bad weather. Is that a bad idea?
Yeah, probably not the best idea. You know, I see that, you know, we all kind of enjoy a good disaster, I guess.
A little sliding, you know, yeah. Spinning out, you know.
Right.
As long as you don't go in the ditch, you know.
Yeah, probably a good chance to stay at home and just relax until we get the roads clear. But, you know, just any snowstorm, we're out there clearing the roads and, you know, and pretty much 8-10 hours, you know, you're going to be able to get out and the roads will be a lot safer then.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can wait, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very good. Now, we've talked to some of this before and the technology of snow plowing, you're still pushing snow, but it's changed. I mean, if you brought back some of your drivers from yesteryear, some of them would be almost lost in the cab of one of your mega snow plows. How big, how much do they weigh? Give us some dimensions of big.
Yeah, the trucks are really big. They're a lot bigger than they used to be. They can carry almost double the amount of salt that they used to be able to.
That means they don't
handle.
Have to go back to the yard
right.
quite
they,
as often.
They don't have to go back as much. Yeah, you get in the cockpit of one of those, and it's almost like a airplane cockpit. There's so many buttons and levers and different. I don't even know what all those do. But now we have what we call wing plows, which they didn't have 20 years ago, to where we can do two lanes, and at the same time we used to be able to do one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an improvement. A lot of improvement on the materials you can put on the roads to get them thawed off faster. And
so you use more than one club in your bag, huh?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things we can do. And yeah, those trucks are really big nowadays. I mean, you know, and that's another thing. You know, it's a little harder to see. They're so big. If you can just stay back and respect that'd be great.
Absolutely. One of the things of those who live out in the country, it's always that thing about the mailbox derby or whatever you want to call it. But how do you keep a mailbox up all winter long? What is the ideal design? I mean, I've already had two, I think, knocked off in 8 years, you know. So, and it was the last one was the very last snowfall of the year, you know. It's like I thought I made it.
Yeah, one of the things we tell the residents of our county is go out and shake your mailbox. Because a lot of mailboxes utilize a wooden post, and after about, you know, 10 years or so, that wooden post at the bottom, because that's where, you know, the moisture is, it gets rotten.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of people that call about their mailboxes being down, and we go and investigate, and most of the time what really happens is the force of the snow, so plow is kind of shedding that snow off the road, and the force of that snow actually mm-hmm. hits the mailbox, and because of that rotten stump of a post, it actually falls over. So what we tell people is go out, shake your mailbox. We've seen mailboxes that have fallen over that were, you know, held together by duct tape and bungee straps and propped up by rocks. And we're like, yeah, you know, you really got to check that before the winter comes, because there's quite a bit of force of that snow.
Oh, yeah.
And
you don't want to be standing next to the road when that goes by.
Right. Oh, no. And that's one thing we tell our guys, to slow down, you know. And so, yeah, we tell people to shake that mailbox, make sure it's on a sturdy base so that the snow doesn't take it off. Now, if the plow hits it, that's another thing that...
That's on you. Huh?
Yeah. We try not to do. But it does happen once in a while.
You know, you don't know that you have a bad one. That's what you're suggesting, is to shake it to see if it's going to make it through the winter. And folks, if you've ever had one go down in the winter, it's no fun to fix it in the winter. Your options are more limited. you probably aren't. The ground may be frozen. You'll find out there's more gravel and rocks. In order to make a good roadbed, you have gravel and all that other stuff. That's hard to shovel and stuff. plan for the winter, just like you, whatever you do for your house and yard and put things away, shake the mailbox. That might be our code phrase for today.
Right, right, yep. Make sure it's sturdy, because it, like you said, yes, the ground's hard enough. Then you add the winter, and it's frozen, and it's not that fun working out there in the cold anyway.
So. Well, let's say that they have a good solid mailbox and it got knocked over for whatever reason. What is Mike's one-stop trick to putting your mailbox together until the ground thaws?
Well, if you can't get through that ice, there's a couple different things you can do. You can get a 5-gallon bucket of sand.
Okay.
And you put that post in there and your mailbox. And that's kind of a temporary fix you could do.
It may get knocked over again, but it's, mm-hmm. you just set it right back up.
Yeah. And that seems to work very well. And the mail carriers are kind of used to that. They understand that.
What's your thought about putting concrete in that bucket?
Yeah, concrete is not something you really want to see, especially on the side of the road, just for safety issues.
If for some reason it rolled out into the lanes or something.
You know, hitting that concrete with a, you know.
And you may have some liability in that.
Yeah, if there's an accident, that's a lot worse thing to hit than something that's a little more, gives a little more.
And you can always go back down to your favorite home improvement store, and you can get another 5-gallon bucket, and you can get another bag of sand.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good option. Yep.
I've looked at some of these swing-away mailboxes. What's your thoughts on those ones that they can take some force, and they swing away, and then they settle back down in the position?
Yeah, I'm not real familiar with those, but yeah, that would be a good thing. You know, there may be some other issues with them, but it would take that force and then come back.
I've looked at many mailboxes over the years, trying to find the benchmark, the best design, especially after I've lost my first or second one. Going back to that one, it was just amazing. I put a barrier in front of mine. It's a wooden post, so it can break away, once you know, they had that last of the season, the heavy wet snow that froze on the roadbed with, let's say 1.5 to 2 inches, and just like a hockey player, the offensive one, I don't know all their positions of hockey, as they come down towards the net, they try to sneak it up in the corner of the net between the goalie, and it snuck in and knocked my mailbox down to a chunk of ice. It's just part of living out in the country.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the hazards. Yeah. Certainly.
Your favorite box, you said, is the simple box. And we kind of danced around that particular one. But what is the definition, Mike's ideal mailbox post and box?
You know, what I mean by a simple box is just a simple post.
A 4x4?
4x4 wood, you know.
Should it be treated?
Yeah, definitely would want to be treated, you know, just
for ground
to last, you know, as long as possible. No wood is going to last there forever. Some people I've talked to think they do. They don't. Nothing's going to last forever out there, but just a simple piece of posted treated wood, simple mailbox on top. What that does, if there, you know, is an accident, or somebody flies off the road, you know, that's just the least amount of liability that, you know, is going to be incurred, just because that will snap off. And but that accident is going to be mitigated just because it was, you know, nice, a simple post. It was lightweight. It's not going to do that much damage.
Absolutely. How far off the road should a mailbox be put?
You know, what generally we recommend is look down the road to see what your neighbors have done and the mailboxes that have been there for a while, and kind of use that as your guide. Any kind of measurement we can give, you know, kind of can kind of be construed, but that's, and then consult with your mail carrier. They'll give you a good idea. And this type, you know, we want to get off the road so far. And then they also have guidelines on how high to put it in, the off the ground. So, you know, kind of look what your neighborhood is doing, consult with your mail carrier, and take their guidelines.
Very good. Is there, it's interesting, I called my county road commission, which was a different county than you serve in, and I said, you know, the two-lane road, it's actually in front of the station, then transitions to my house as they come around that wide curve. It would be nice if they extended that do not pass zone, you know, another 200 feet and such. And they told me that probably your counterpart said that they have rules for these things, guidelines for that. I was, it was good to know that, but it was just kind of interesting. I didn't know there were rules.
Yeah, so and that specific rule would be called passing site distance.
Okay.
So you need to see, based on what the speed of that road is, you need to see so far in order to pass safely. So for a 55-mile-an-hour road, I think it's like 600 feet. You need to clearly see down that road, all portions of that road, for 600 feet. Otherwise, there's no passing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they're going to stick to that. That's the criteria. It's not necessarily, you know, based on mailboxes or driveways. Some counties will limit passing at intersections. Every intersection, they're just going to have no passing.
Okay.
Just because they don't want that through the intersection. Not all counties do that. But, yeah, that's some of the criteria they use to kind of where they put those lines.
What we talked about in the previous interview, not all roads are yours. Just because it's in your county doesn't mean that you're the czar of every road.
Right. Yeah, in our county we have 250 lane miles of MDOT roads. So the state highways, U.S. roads, 131, U.S. 10, just for example. And so in our county, we don't actually have a contract. Some counties have a contract for MDOT roads where they will go out and maintain those in the winter. We don't. We actually have an MDOT garage in our county, and they maintain those roads. So we get calls on, oh, so such and such is happening on this road or this road. And we say, well, you need to call MDOT, and that's not our jurisdiction.
So who else do you share roads with besides the state?
Villages and cities. So villages and cities are in charge of their roads in the jurisdiction that they have. So they maintain those, they plow those, and sometimes we help each other out. Like we have a contract with a city just because they do both sides of this road. You know, it is just easier for them to just kind of keep going and do the county part. So we have an agreement with them, and they bill us to take care of that road. So sometimes we have agreements to help each other out. There are several villages that sometimes their equipment goes haywire, breaks down. We'll go and help them out and maintain the roads until their equipment can come back.
So when you have a big snow blizzard, what's it like in your neighborhood? I mean, is it like a crisis center?
It is a little bit, yeah. You know, we're all kind of there, and the guys are coming in and out, and we're making sure that their equipment is running, all the mechanics are in, because something is going to break on that day, and they need to get it back out very quickly. And so it's kind of all hands on deck, and everybody knows that. Nobody's on vacation that day, you know. And surprisingly, nobody's sick that day. They're all here, and it's all hands on deck.
Well, it might be kind of like when I talk to the firefighters and stuff, there's a certain amount of it's in their blood, and they live for these moments.
Right. And that happens in other times, too. Like we get a big windstorm, and we have crews. Just everybody's out. Even people in the office will be going out that are normally, you know, admin in the office, just because there's so many trees down and not enough people to get those roads back opened again. That's another, you know, crisis moment. And, you know, there'll be somebody kind of like a dispatcher who's taking all those calls about where the roads are down, and then they're sending people to go to the next one.
What, give us a typical storm, if there is a snowstorm, and or maybe your most memorable snowstorm, and some stories that our listeners would find very interesting.
One of the last couple years ago, and my, you know, I've been there 4 years, but that I remember is we had a snowstorm, and, you know, snow doesn't ask permission to when to come. It was on Christmas Day. And so, you know, typical Christmas, everybody's off enjoying the time with their family.
You're at a skeleton staff.
Right. But, I mean, there was a big storm. And so everybody was in. And it was actually on a weekend and a holiday. So everybody was in and everybody was working on Christmas Day. And I think Christmas Eve, actually. And so we were all out. We were all working. But that's just, you know, we'd rather be, you know, the guys would rather be home with their families. But, you know, that's part of what they signed up for. And so when we hire people, I tell them that, you know, generally, you know, holidays we're going to be off, but there's going to be some where you're going to be out, you know, making the road safe for those travelers.
I think I remember that Christmas Eve. We were down in Grand Rapids coming back through, and it was a bit harrowing, if I recall.
Yeah, it was a lot of snow, and but, you know, everybody was out there, everybody worked, everybody kind of got it and did a great job and got the roads cleared up.
What, leave a thought for our listeners when they think about they see the county snowplow going through and their particular one. What do you want? I guess pull aside, give them 200 feet and so on and so forth. What should they think about? I did citizens, state police citizens academy, and every time I see a blue goose squad car, I think it's some of my friends.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I just think before I worked for the road commission, I would come up on, you know, somebody plowing snow. I didn't really give it a second thought, didn't realize what they were going through.
And they're a real person.
Yeah, they're a real person. And I just tried to get around them as fast as I could and just get clear of them. Now I know what they're dealing with, you know, all the different decisions they're making as they're driving that vehicle, that huge piece of equipment, and how hard it is. And so now I come up on, you know, maybe I'm in a different county. I'm really paying attention. I'm really slowing up. I'm realizing what a difficult time they're having, and they're just trying to get this road cleared off. So I'm a little more patient. And so that's one thing I can just ask, that, you know, just realize they're trying to do the best they can. Be patient, and just be a little bit extra safe, because those are huge pieces of equipment that they're, you know, and they can't always see you.
That's right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming back. And I want to encourage our listeners to listen to the previous program we did on roads with the Kent County Road Commission and also with the Wexford. Thanks again for being a part of Strong Tower Radio Feature.
Thanks, Tom.
Until next time, Tom Azure for the Strong Tower Radio Network.